It's the Wide Receiver Show. There are so many good ones around the NFL, and we're going to discuss specifically what makes a great wide receiver, why you don't necessarily need to be fast to be good, and we're unveiling our ranking of the top 10 receivers in the NFL this week on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We move along with our position ranking shows. This is the wide receivers, Andy. And look, everyone knows the wide receivers. They get big statistical output, big numbers. They do dances and they live and they love and they laugh. And they're not exactly unsung heroes, but we're going to get into why wide receivers, certain wide receivers, are good in this show and what it takes to be a good NFL receiver.
This will be one of my favorite shows because wide receiver play has, I think, as many details to it as just about any non-quarterback position in the NFL. And there's and included in that is a variety of schemes and a variety of types of wide receivers.
Well, let's start with something along the lines of types before we get into our position rankings later in the show. We talk all the time with defensive backs, Andy, with cornerbacks. Is he outside or is he inside? What is he better at? We don't talk about it as much with receivers, and it seems like receivers these days move back and forth between outside and alignment in the slot more than ever. What are the differences between playing outside and playing inside for a receiver?
Well, the obvious difference would be, inside you have a two-way go, and you're going to run more underneath routes inherently. You're going to line up, or you're going to wind up over the ball at the end of the route, just meaning you're right down the middle of the field in front of the quarterback. That's why you see the shiftier wide receivers, your Julian Edelman, Tyler Boyd types. Those guys are the ones who play inside. Mm-hmm. Outside, you're hindered by the sideline, which impacts your route combinations. There's really only one direction that you can go on the outside. That would be towards the field, depending on how wide your split is. But if there's only one direction you can go, then the way you would change up for the defense is by how deep your route is. And that's how plays are designed. So horizontal movement for wide receivers inside, because they can go those directions. Outside, it's all about the verticality of your routes, because those are the only directions available. So you get to see bigger guys more often. But Gary, you're right. More guys are playing inside who typically would play outside. And a big part of that is because it's all about route combinations. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to stretch the field, you can stretch the field from the slot just as easily. In fact, easier even at times, and you can from the outside.
Yeah, I was going to say, you see a lot more big slot guys as opposed to the other way with guys who you think you normally see in the slot going outside.
You do. It's interesting. That's exactly right. Like Jakeem Grant for the Dolphins, and I can't believe we're talking about Grant as the first wide receiver in our show here, but he fascinates me because he's 5'7". And he does not play the slot. He plays outside. And I've come to learn from watching Grant and talking to people is, and I've talked to people who coach him and people who played against him about him, is that he plays outside because he can only play outside. He is not very good at the inside shifting movement, and he's not very great when the picture changes. So if you're inside the defense, there's a lot more defenders near you, especially if it's zone coverage. You have to read the field differently than if you're outside. And Grant is just not that kind of athlete. He's more comfortable as a straight line player, so he plays outside. But he's an extreme example of the rule, isn't he, Gary? What other short receivers? There, like you said, there are tall ones that play inside. Marcus Colston played the slot for the Saints for years. But how many short ones ever play outside?
Yeah, I mean, Steve Smith was a guy who always came to mind back in the day, but it is. I mean, Jakeem Grant is an exception to the rule.
And I'm trying to think if it's interesting that so many big guys are playing the slot inside, because I think there are two kinds of slot. It's a shifty kind of slot receiver or the more vertical one who can win down the seams. And I guess I bet the more we talk about this as the show goes along, Gary, we'll realize that the really good offenses are the ones whose wide receivers are somewhere in between. Think of the Rams with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, these guys that are slot guys but outside guys at the same time.
Let's talk a little bit about sort of the big-bodied guys here, because I'm going to go really shorthand here. You have contested catch guys. You have your, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is the king of that. And you have guys who can consistently create a little more separation. Do you get the sense, talking to coaches around the league, that there's a preference between one and the other? Is it a quarterback's preference at this point that we're talking about?
It is, but usually a coach's preference is also a quarterback's preference. Those two men often see the game the same way. And the preference would be guys who can separate, because you want, it's called quarterback friendly. If you're a quarterback friendly receiver, quarterback friendly receivers show themselves open. Julian Edelman's probably the most quarterback friendly, or would it be the quarterback friendliest, Gary? You're the editor. How would you say that?
Quarterback friendliest.
Quarterback friendliest receiver in the NFL be Julian Edelman. He's right up there with just about anyone. When he gets open, there's a decisiveness to his movement. He runs those option routes as well in New England scheme. So he has to be decisive coming out of an option route, because the quarterback doesn't know which way he's going until he executes the option route. That's why some guys are great in that scheme and other guys couldn't play in it for New England. But Edelman is a great separator and is a decisive opener, and quarterbacks like that. But if you're, that's Tom Brady we're talking about. If you're, say, Cam Newton, and you're more of a power thrower and you're not a precision accuracy guy, and you throw on time downfield, but you don't throw on a tight schedule underneath so much, then I would imagine big-bodied guys would be what you prefer, which is probably why they drafted Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin. Neither guy worked out, but the concept, Benjamin and Funchess, those guys fit Newton. So a little bit, it gets back to the style of QB.
I'm fascinated to see the marriage between Cole Beasley and Josh Allen this year, because that seems
too.
To be
I don't
completely...
think it's going to go very well.
Yeah.
And it's too bad, because Cole Beasley is a great slot receiver.
I'll just say this about Josh Allen, though, and I suppose this is turning more into the quarterback show, so I'll pivot right after this, but Josh Allen has never quite had a receiver like that. He obviously didn't have one last year in Buffalo. At Wyoming, his receivers couldn't separate at all, so I'm interested to see if that maybe unlocks a little more confidence in him as a thrower, which I think can lead to improved precision accuracy, not necessarily great precision accuracy.
What we need to find out is how much can he throw with touch. Part of the reason Cam Newton has not become an accurate underneath thrower is he doesn't throw with a tremendous amount of touch. He doesn't control his touch and his velocity very well. My guess is Allen will probably be similar to that.
And I just want to plagiarize another writer and just throw a quote out at you, because during draft season, N'Keal Harry, the Arizona State receiver who the Patriots drafted in the first round, was a favorite of mine in this draft. He is a contested catch specialist without a doubt out of Arizona State. But Lance Zierlein does the NFL.com you know, profiles every year, so I have the guys I like, and then when Lance starts writing about him, I always check it out just to see if I'm completely off, because I have no confidence in myself, and I enjoy seeing what other people think of the guys I like. But he gets quotes from people around the league on most prospects, and his quote on Harry was, and this is a wide receivers coach with AFC team, "All this talk about his lack of separation is overdone. In the league, nobody gets that much separation anyway. You have to know how to use your body and route leverage, and you need strong hands. From what I've seen of him, he can do all that stuff well."
That's probably fair. I could see how someone would say that. I don't know if I disagree with that either. There are guys who get separation in the league, though. The idea that nobody does, that's extreme. But I get what the person, whoever said that, I get what they're saying.
Yeah.
I imagine the Patriots see N'Keal Harry as an outside receiver, even though he played the slot at Arizona State. And I can tell you why I imagine that. The Patriots, I've heard, have a very specific prototype for slot receiver, which is not a surprise, because Amendola, Edelman, Wes Welker, these guys are all the same style of receiver. And I don't just mean little white guys. I mean guys who are shifty and get yards after the catch. That's how they teach it in New England. They want you to turn up field and dive for extra yards after the catch. And that's the big emphasis there. That's not what N'Keal Harry is as a slot receiver. He doesn't fit that type at all.
And I just want to ask you real quick, Andy, because you put something good up on a bad social media platform the other day. You had a neat little video on Cooper Kupp there and what he does and sort of his efficient movements as a receiver in the screen game. I want to know if you just wanted to quickly run through that because I don't want to spoil it, but Cooper Kupp did not make it into our top 10, and I don't know how deeply we are going to discuss him throughout the rest of the show here.
Yeah, well, first of all, was the video... Did you think there was too? I do that in our football room here at our house, and there's a lot of glare on the screen on that video because the football room, like every room in this house we have, is just all windows pretty much. Did you think it was too glary?
It was a little glary, but I think everyone's kind of used to glare and things that aren't like ideally produced in this day and age. I mean, everyone does it. People record off their laptops and it looks terrible. I didn't think it looked... I've seen much worse. Okay. It didn't look great, but I've seen much, much worse. It got the job done.
What Cooper Kupp does, what we broke down on that play, when he catches a screen, I had this explained to me by Zach Taylor the other day when I was at the Bengals. I spent 3 days there with Zach Taylor, and Taylor had learned this from Sean McVay, and I think McVay invented it. Although no coach has ever invented anything, they'll always tell you a coach from 20 years ago in high school who came up with the idea first. The idea is that when you catch a receiver screen, you don't want to be moving your feet. So a lot of receivers, if I'm the guy outside and I'm catching the screen, my tendency is to take a step back. And as I wait for, which is what you're supposed to do. Yeah. And then as I wait for the ball, I'm chopping my feet up and down, kind of like what Peyton Manning used to do in the pocket. It was his style in the pocket of movement. That's just the innate tendency for someone catching a ball, especially if you're trying to be a shifty, quick upfield run after catch guy, which you always are on a wide receiver screen. But what McVay teaches those Rams players to do is to keep their feet still, planted in the ground. The quarterback then throws to your upfield shoulder and you let the throw take you into your downhill run. So the Rams receivers don't drift back or take a couple steps back. They pivot back to catch a receiver screen and then they get straight downhill from there, and Cooper Kupp is perfect at it.
Yeah. No, that was a nice little video breakdown you did there on Twitter. If you don't follow Andy on Twitter, follow him. Follow me too, but I don't tweet.
Gary, you know what I did last night?
What's that?
I sat on my porch, and it's going to sound like this was why I sat on my porch. It's not. I don't know why I'm sharing the porch part. But I sat on my porch scrolling through like the last month of your tweets.
Last month of my tweet? They're all just retweets from like radio appearances.
They are, and some of those were shows that I was on, and I'm surprised that I haven't noticed that before. But I think what happened was I had clicked on you somehow, and I thought that it was my main Twitter feed, and so I was going way down. And after like a month or so, I saw like, oh, this one's from April. That's how I realized it was you. But you have an okay Twitter account. I think you use more Twitter more than you let on.
I don't think so. I reply. I will reply to people as much as I can. I'm not on it that much. I try not to go on it that much. I check it out. You know, you have to check it out when you're an editor and you're supposed to be keeping up with the news cycle. But I'm just not crazy about it. It doesn't make me happy when I'm on there.
Well, no, I don't think anybody comes away happy. But that doesn't mean it still fulfills some part of us.
Not a good
ugly
part.
Horrible, yeah. Self-hatred part of
not,
us.
Not a part I want to fulfill. But yeah, I don't know. That's okay. Saying you were on your porch. This is very... We're talking about your house a lot. This is like an HGN show. This is turning into a little
you're
bit.
Yeah, right. Too much. Bit. We'll get back to the wide receivers.
This, I think, is going to be your favorite topic to touch on here. You have been doing these series of teams for the MMQB, and you can check it out. The all, you've done all under 30, all small, all big. Did you do all big, or did I just make
no,
that
No, we did all small, so guys who were a certain percent smaller than the average player at their position per combine measurables. We did the all over 30. I'm going to do all under 30 soon just to see how they match up against all over 30. And we did all undrafted, and then we're going to talk about the all slow team.
Yes,
here.
The all slow team, and the receivers on the all slow team, and this is based on 40 times pre-draft. It's absurd. It really is. These are slow receivers: Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams, Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, Juju Smith-Schuster, Tyler Boyd, Jarvis Landry, Jameson Crowder. Those guys all tested poorly in the 40-yard dash. So I guess my question to you, Andy, is We can kind of look at that and say speed is maybe a little bit overrated for wide receivers, but what does make a good route runner? Because I think you'd look at all these guys and say route running is a strength.
Absolutely. Remember, we've talked about this before. The defense has to play at your speed as a receiver. They have to cover you. So you don't need to be the fastest guy in the world if you understand how to get open on routes. And a lot of that gets into the way you stem your routes coming out of off the line of scrimmage, your splits, which by that we mean how far from the quarterback are you lining up? How good are you when you line up wide? If you're in a minus split or a tight split close to the QB, how effective are you and how diverse is your playbook? What happens when corners scout wide receivers, they break it down by the split often. So they'll watch every time Antonio Brown lines up outside the numbers. Then they'll watch every time he's outside the numbers with a slot guy inside of him. Then they'll watch every time Brown is inside the numbers. And when they study him that way, what they discover are a lot of patterns in the routes that those guys run. So your offense has to help you a little bit as a receiver. You have to diversify your splits and give your receivers a chance here, because if DBs know what you're going to run based on your splits, you got a real problem. And that happens a lot more than you would guess. So the really good receivers put deception into all of this, and their systems help them out. And they understand how to get open and separate at the top of the route when the ball is in the air. And that gets into some of those little nuanced movements that we've talked about, Gary, that Antonio Brown's so great at. Hopkins mm-hmm. is great. Basically, the ability to get away with misdemeanor, small-time offensive pass interference.
Yeah, and Antonio Brown will be in our top 10, which I don't think is much of a spoiler, but we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to him. I did want to talk about one guy who I made the executive decision and no one objected, so I just went ahead and did it. But we excluded Tyreek Hill from our rankings this year because I think there's a better chance than not that you will not see him in 2019, and these are our rankings for the 2019 season. But Tyreek Hill, I asked Andy and I asked our researcher voter this week, that is the wonderful Paul Duncan, I asked them to send me a ranking with Tyreek in it just so we could see where he would have ranked if we included him. He would have been second. He would have been second if he was eligible. So I just want to ask you, Andy, and I don't know if there's a great answer to this, but for the longest time in Andy Reid's offenses, everyone looked at it and said, you don't need a great receiver. You don't need a true number one receiver for this offense. It'll work without that. So I guess my first question is that narrative kind of BS? And my second question is, if Tyreek Hill is not going to be playing this year or for, you know, possibly forever at this point, what does it do to the Chiefs? How damaging is that to the Chiefs?
This is why Mecole Hardman is the most fascinating rookie in the NFL this season, because he's basically Tyreek Hill light from what we understand. And we're going to just talk Tyreek Hill as a football player concept now. I agree with everything that you're saying. I don't think he'll be on the field either. That's why Mecole Hardman was drafted. That's why he's going to be interesting. I had Tyreek Hill number one, because when I think about this, I decide, all right, well, the truth of all truths is, who would you want to play against or not want to play against? Not necessarily who you want to play with, but who do you not want to have to guard? And Tyreek Hill, to me, is the guy that most teams in the NFL would say he's the one guy we don't want to have to guard. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because of the speed. And so what we're going to find out is how much of it is just a sheer function of speed in that offense and how much of it's a function of Hill, who has become a more polished, he's not a polished wide receiver, but he's a more polished receiver than he was 2 years ago, certainly. And what it's why, obviously, speed is a big deal, even though we just said slow guys, you know, that you can play with them as well. You can scheme with speed differently, though. An example of what the Chiefs do with speed in their scheme, they'll go to 3x1 formations a lot of the time, and their innermost wide receiver, the guy that lines up at position number 3, the inside slot, it's almost always Tyreek Hill, because when you put speed at that position, that threatens a defense more than anything. For one, it's the fastest path downfield, because you're getting right to the middle of the field quicker. You're getting on linebackers and safeties more often. The way they use Hill's speed is fascinating, also in some of their misdirection stuff where he stretches the field horizontally. And now we'll find out if Mecole Hardman, who's fast, but I'm sure he's not as fast as Tyreek Hill, we'll find out if that kind of speed is good enough for the system to still work. I think it will be.
Okay. Sammy, what do you think of Sammy Watkins? Sammy Watkins didn't make our top 10. I just want to touch on Sammy Watkins real quick. He was semi-healthy last year. He would become Travis Kelce's number one target, but he would become, obviously, a much bigger part of that offense without Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, Watkins, I know the Rams traded him after 1 year, and I don't know if they felt like they upgraded, but they probably did. But he was regarded by defenses as a number one receiver that year in LA. He mm-hmm. drew a lot of double teams and ex-ISO respected coverages where he's by himself on the backside. He's not that kind of guy anymore, and the league has caught up to that and now understands that. I don't know if he quite ever was that kind of guy, but he was certainly treated like that, and that's all that the Rams needed. And Kansas City, I imagine Watkins could be a slightly better version of Chris Conley. Does that seem about right to you?
Okay. That seems uninspiring. I don't like hearing that if I'm a Chiefs fan, but I think that might be realistic at this point.
Well, but you don't think that would be good enough?
Sure, that could be good enough. I just think if you're looking at Sammy Watkins, you're probably still thinking back to 2015, 2016, when it looked like he was going to be really one of the elite guys in the league for a long time. And it just injuries have robbed him.
Part of the reason the Chiefs have the kind of players they have, though, is because they know they don't need a ton from their regular wide receivers. Their system's built around Travis Kelce, and then it was Tyreek Hill, and now we're going to see if it can be Mecole Hardman. And that's the long and short of it. So there are other receivers, any guys who can be where they're supposed to be, but they don't rely on guys to win one-on-one a whole lot at those other spots because they have Kelce and they have Hill, or they have maybe we'll see what Hardman is.
All right. Well, we are about to get to our rankings. Just a quick production note first. Not a production note, scheduling note, programming note. That's what they call it. Boy, it's been a long week, Andy. If you haven't been keeping up, Bad Football Movies has moved on to episode 7. If you go one back in your feed, you can get that. It is Necessary Roughness this week, which I'm curious to listen to. I listened to him on the weekend, so I haven't listened to this yet, but I saw Necessary Roughness as a kid. And I have fond memories of it, but not specific memories. Like, I just have a good overall impression of the movie. I enjoyed it when I was a child, but yeah, I don't know.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's Scott Bakula. It is not a Quantum Leap prequel or sequel or anything, but Scott Bakula is in it. Kathy Ireland is in it. Kathy Ireland. Sinbad was in it. That's right, boy. But Kathy Ireland.
Whatever happened to File?
I don't know. He was in an American Dad a couple years ago. What is Sinbad up to? Brandon, you know what Sinbad is up to these days? Brandon doesn't.
Yeah,
know.
He shrugs.
But yeah, Kathy Ireland was in it.
Kathy
Ireland was a very important person back then when that movie came out. So
absolutely. How old would you guess Sinbad is?
61.
Yeah, 62.
Oh.
Brandon had 65, it looks like. Or is he saying 55?
No, he was going in the 50s.
Yeah, 62.
He's going 58.
So that's what happened to him. He got old.
I think he aged, and he's probably enjoying his wealth and looking back on his success and nodding in affirmation of what a wonderful life he's lived. But anyways, if you go two back in your feed, you'll get Albert, Jenny, and Connor on the Texans firing a Brian Gaine, Carson Wentz contract, good stuff there. Obviously, if you subscribe to the MMQB podcast, which you should already, but if you've made the mistake in your life of not subscribing yet, please do. You'll get all these shows right in your feed, like no work. They're all free. Just go ahead and do it. All right, time for the rankings, Andy. Andy votes, his vote counts double. I vote, my vote counts single. Paul Duncan is our third voter this week, the wonderful Paul Duncan, who, by the way, Andy, you are correct. I believe Paul goes to Bowling Green University. I thought it was, all these years, I thought it was in Kentucky, because there is a Bowling Green, Kentucky. I just thought it was there. It's not even close to Kentucky. Well, I mean, relative to the rest of the world, it's close to Kentucky, but it's Northwest Ohio. It's closer to Michigan.
I drove through it the other day. And again, I only knew that because I happened to drive through it on my Midwest trip, leaving Cincinnati, which I still think is more of a Kentucky city than Ohio City.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But yeah, when you told me that it was in Ohio, I with certainty told you you were wrong. Turns out okay. I was wrong.
I can live with it. You know, I'm looking at our list here. Our number 11 through 20 is also extremely strong.
It is, right?
This is the deepest list we've had. Maybe it's because there's two of these guys on the field.
Yeah.
Two receivers at least. Three, really.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Pretty much three for most teams. But let's start with Andy's favorite part of the show, which is the others receiving votes. I will read them. We had 24 guys get votes this week. This is going to be 24 through 11. I do fewest votes to most votes. So you can kind of figure out where they rank, even though I rudely don't tell you where they rank. We're starting with Robbie Anderson, Larry Fitzgerald, Jarvis Landry, Alshon Jeffrey, Cooper Kupp, Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Kenny Galladay, Julian Edelman, Amari Cooper, Tyler Lockett, Stephon Diggs, T.Y. Hilton, and Davante Adams. Congratulations to all of you for receiving votes. All right, number 10. Let's do 8 through 10 here. So 10 is Juju Smith-Schuster, 9 is Mike Evans, and 8 is AJ Green. I do want to start with Smith-Schuster, Andy, because he was a guy who was really, he was one of those big slots his rookie year. They used him a little more in that ex-ISO spot last year, and obviously with Antonio Brown gone, you figure he'd play that more often this year. And I just want to know what your feeling is on him in that spot as opposed to being in the slot, which I think we'd agree is his best position.
Yeah, Smith-Schuster, he can play anywhere in the formation. I thought he was equally effective in all places in the formation. And I imagine he'll play ex-ISO this year, but he's going to move around a lot because the reason that he was moving around last year was wide receivers coach Daryl Drake wanted to move Antonio Brown around. Brown, for the longest time, played on the weak side. They put him more into the trip side last season. So if they did that for Brown, I would imagine they'll do that for Smith-Schuster. And he becomes a little bit harder to double team when you do that for when you got to locate him before the snap. If you're going to double him, two guys have to find him in theory. I like Smith-Schuster a lot. The tendency is to think that he's a product of the system because he doesn't really look dynamic, does he, Gary? Like if you just watch him in a vacuum, I don't think you see Calvin Johnson type of traits or Odell mm-hmm. Beckham type of traits at all. He's kind of an in-between, isn't he?
No, that's totally fair.
Yeah. And so with those guys, you tend to think they're part of the system, but Smith-Schuster's production last year, I thought on film, clearly derived from his effectiveness. I don't think he was just the number two who got lucky and played with Antonio Brown. I think he is indeed a full-fledged number one receiver, and I think he's that right now.
Number 7, Keenan Allen. Number 6, Adam Thielen. Number 5, Michael Thomas. I want to highlight Thielen here for a moment. Is it fair to say he had a... He had a down year. We know he had a down year. You can just look at the numbers and see he had a down year last year compared to what he had been doing. But was he less effective last year? Is it a chemistry issue with Kirk Cousins?
There may have been some of that. Remember, they had that spat on the side. It was really more than a spat on the sideline in the Week 17 game against Chicago. That was just Minnesota's season came crumbling down. Thielen drew a little more attention than usual last year. It's interesting, though, because when you play the Vikings, you have to decide how are we going to cover Thielen and Diggs. And something I know what the Patriots did is they'll put their best corner on Diggs and double Thielen, or maybe you do it the other way around. If you want, you put your best corner on Thielen, double Diggs. Some teams outright doubled both of those guys, which is why I think Minnesota needs to find another wide receiver. Yeah. Or a more dynamic receiving tight end, and maybe Irv Smith Jr. can be that guy. But it's Thielen and Diggs are tremendous players, and Diggs is probably a little more explosive than Thielen, and Thielen's probably the better all-around asset. I really like Adam Thielen. And can I say something else, Gary, that I promise you I'm just the messenger on this?
Yeah.
Oh, you look nervous.
I do. Because
yeah,
I am.
I feel nervous saying it. I and Brandon's leaning in here. Everybody's staring at me now. I've heard this from several coaches over the years. One of the most valuable things you can have, according to them, is a really athletic white wide receiver.
You've said this before. I've heard this before. Maybe you've just said it in
private. I've said that before on the show?
I think on the show. Or maybe it was in private, and now we're about to be inundated with angry phone calls because they'll call about this, Andy.
If it weren't for having so many different coaches say it, it's not something I necessarily would relay. But I understand what they mean by that. Jordy Nelson was the guy that used to talk about it. It's really when you have speed right there. That's what coaches really mean when they say that.
And by the way, I do have to correct myself here because very unprofessional of me. I am looking at Adam Thielen's numbers now. His numbers were actually much better last year than they were in 2017. Why did it feel like it was a down year then? Just
I'll
they
tell
didn't
you
win?
Why it felt, because he started out red hot. Remember, he had like seven consecutive 100-yard games, and so he was on pace for probably 1,800 yards, I'm guessing, and he wound up with 13. So he was quieter down the stretch last season.
That's a good point. That explains my idiocy right there. But he had 113 catches last year, which I just pulled up and was shocked to see.
His agent is a friend of mine, Blake Baratz, and I heard this story well before Adam Thielen became a full-fledged superstar. He said the Vikings had come to Thielen early in his career and offered him a contract, and Baratz said, "I know how you work, Adam, and I would recommend you don't take the contract because I think you're going to get a lot better." And I've shared that one too as well, but that worked out real well. That was good agenting by Blake Baratz.
It is. It was. And Michael Thomas, how are they getting it done in New Orleans at this point? Or I should say, how do you think they get it done going forward if Drew Brees' arm is indeed in a, let's say, sharper decline than it might have been in past years?
Well, Thomas would help camouflage some of that decline, which he has already. He is a tremendous fundamental wide receiver. He's not the fastest guy. I think he lines up all over, though. He must be very smart in New Orleans' scheme. That's a lot that you do in that scheme, a lot of different formations and personnel packages. And his ability to separate at the top of routes on in-breaking routes, I think it's probably the best. I mean, a lot of these guys are great at this. That's why they're on this list. Mm-hmm. I think he tops Keenan Allen and Odell Beckham as the best in-breaking route runners in football, though.
Number four. DeAndre Hopkins, and we know what DeAndre Hopkins is. Are you worried at all about DeAndre Hopkins after that wild card game appearance? And I know, obviously we're not going to overreact to a single game, but he was banged up as well. But he was kind of taken out of the game by Pierre Desir, which is worrisome in the playoffs.
It is. Desir had a great day. I'm guessing that Hopkins was maybe a little more banged up than we thought. I would chalk it up to just one bad game. It's not like there's a blueprint out on DeAndre Hopkins all of a sudden, because mm-hmm. you're right. We know what he is. He is a slow, methodical receiver. He's not overly precise or fundamental. And yet, when the ball's in the air, there's nobody better in the NFL at getting that ball. He seeks out physicality. He's the only receiver in the NFL probably who wants to be jammed. If you're not jamming him, he's going to try to come contact you, because he separates off of body contact. He does not separate off of creating space.
Yeah. And this top three, I really thought we'd have a different top three this year, but we have the same top three we have every year when we do this show.
Well, we would have had a different one if Tyreek Hill were in the equation.
That's right. That's a good point, actually. But and two of these guys have obviously changed teams. But number three, Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. in Freddie Kitchens' offense with Baker Mayfield throwing to him. I mean, would you presume that means more production for him at this point?
Well, there's a lot of weapons here, so the ball might get spread around. It could be more production for some of the other Browns wide receivers. Like Jarvis Landry might have a big year. And I don't, by the way, think Landry's a particularly great wide receiver. But he gets the job done. There's a tenacity to the way he plays. So if he's getting one-on-one coverage, we might see it go that way. I'm a little disappointed, Gary, that Beckham wasn't there in the offseason. I know it's his right, the voluntary stuff. But when they asked Freddie Kitchens what did Beckham miss, Kitchens said the offense. He missed the installation of the offense. And that I don't quite understand. It's not like he needs a new deal or maybe he wants one. I don't know. But he signed one not long ago with the Giants. So he's under contract. He's got a new team. he needs to learn the offense, and then he needs to let the guys around him learn the offense with him, because the offense is going to feel different when Beckham's on the field versus when he's not. So I thought it was really unprofessional of Beckham to not show up when he needs to be learning the new offense and developing timing with his new teammates.
And they will, they'll do it again. They did it again in the mandatory camps. So he hasn't literally missed the installation.
Sure, fair point. Great point.
But I do agree with you to an extent. It's preferable to just be there, especially your first year with the team. I mean, we're probably going to get to November and we'll look back and say, remember when we were talking about Odell Beckham Jr. skipping voluntary minicamp and what a non-story that was. But
That's true. But what we don't know, though, is how it impacts other guys. Like David Njoku, for example, would gain something if Beckham's around, because that's going to impact Njoku's job and probably some of the things they do. So it's not just, well, Beckham has a production, it's great. It's a whole 11-man unit that you're putting together. And Beckham, that unit's built around him. So when you go to these, there's this idea that these mini camps are just the teams all working out together. That's not what they are. These are real, full-fledged NFL practices, and it's when the baseline and the foundation of the scheme's getting implemented. That's why I think it's a big deal when guys miss it most of the time. And now, like Tom Brady, maybe there's a double standard there. Mm-hmm. That would be the one exception, because they're in the same scheme that they've been in for years, and you know, Tom Brady's probably not going to play anymore if he has to work year-round on that. So I get that it's not black and white, but when you're on a new team, I think it's important for you to be there. Le'Veon Bell should have done the same thing with the Jets.
Number two, Antonio Brown, Oakland Raiders. And we mentioned this a couple times when we talked to a couple cornerbacks from around the league, and we said, who's the best contested catch guy outside of DeAndre Hopkins? And Antonio Brown was the name that came up.
Well, like with all of them, wasn't it? I think all those guys said him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that ability to get away with the subtleties of offensive pass interference, which is a complete compliment, 100% compliment. Mm-hmm. That's what Antonio Brown's special at, his quickness in and out of breaks. We know that as well. I love Antonio Brown as a player.
I would say, if you go back and watch the Steelers-Jaguars divisional round playoff game, or I should say conference semifinals game.
Gary talks about this game all the time, by the
way. I do, because I'm still stunned that he had the kind of performance he had when early in the game he looked like he was running like me out there.
And the performance was a lot of catches, a lot of yards on a very bad leg, if I recall.
That's what it was. So if you go back and watch that, NFL Game Pass, check it out.
Right, and you smartly made the point that's an illustration of some of the subtleties and nuances of his game, that he's not just a quickness guy. You were saying that well before these cornerbacks started telling us that.
I didn't. Maybe they heard me, and they all the light bulb went off for all of them at the same time. But I like I said, I've said this about him before. I think he can get away with it a little bit more too, because as a smaller guy, it's tougher to see.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. That's an irrefutable point.
Number one, Andy, Julio Jones.
Julio Jones is obviously very good when he's out in space, and I think he's effective when he's tighter to the formation. And that's a big deal for teams whose run game and pass game are built off one another, because when your receivers can line up tight to the formation and be willing and able run blockers, that also helps your play action game a lot. And it helps your running game, because those run blockers from receivers, that impacts how defenders fit some of their run gaps. You're now thinking about the wide receiver a little more. It's hard to find a superstar receiver who's willing to do that and able and ask to do that even. And Julio Jones, he does all that stuff. So remember years ago, what was it, the story that I forget who the coach was, but some coach was showing, maybe one of our listeners will know and they can tweet it to us. He was showing highlights to his team of Walter Payton. And he sat the whole team down and played a reel of Walter Payton plays, and they were all blocking plays from Walter Payton. And the point was, great all-around football. I think Julio Jones is one of those Walter Payton type of great all-around players.
I haven't heard that story before. That's a good story.
Well, then it won't be you sending in the tweet, but someone will have heard that story.
Andy, it's time for my favorite part of the show, the lightning-ish round. So strap in. We got 3 hours to go here. First one, who's the most indispensable of the three Rams receivers? And they all got votes for us. In fact, they finished right in a row here in the voting. Robert Woods was first, Brandon Cooks was second, and Cooper Kupp was third. But tell me who's the most irreplaceable of those three?
Sure, indispensable. I would say, if you're asking me as an offensive guy, I would say it's Robert Woods. If you're asking me as a defensive guy, I'd say it's Brandon Cooks. Cooks scares me the most.
Yeah.
Robert Woods is a better receiver than Brandon Cooks. So it doesn't mean he's a more dangerous or a productive receiver, but if we're talking the skills of playing the position, Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks are probably not even in the same class because Cooks has some limitations. He's not a very good intermediate or underneath route runner, shallow intermediate we're talking. He can get open at the 15 to 20 yard range. But Woods, Woods is a coach's dream. And Cooks is just a really fast guy who we saw in the Super Bowl can get taken out by certain physical press coverages.
I was going to say Brandon Cooks because of the explosiveness factor, but we will move on to the next one. Who's the real Amari Cooper, Cowboys version or Raiders version?
I'll say Cowboys version because that ability to separate, Cooper illustrated that. So I will say I'll say the Cowboys. And also remember, Dallas's offense did not do a lot to help Amari Cooper. They moved him around, like mm-hmm. he played different positions, but they're not like those Rams where they do stack releases and switch releases and bunches and different formations. They're not very diverse offense. And now maybe that'll change with Kellen Moore there at offensive coordinator. But Cooper, I thought, really lived up to his end of that deal in Dallas last year, and I'll be eager to see. He's never been in a full-fledged, highly schemed offense. If they start doing that in Dallas, I don't know if they will, but if they do, I'll be really eager to see what kind of player he looks like then.
And give me your breakout player for 2019 or underappreciated star from around the league.
Have I done Kenny Golladay every year on that kind of question?
Probably.
Yeah, and I feel like at some point he is what he is, I guess, right? But Kenny Golladay's skill set, his body type, I'm in love with that. I think that is exactly what you want. He's bendable and long and strong. He's 6'4". He's only played 2 years, so he's still a work in progress. Last year he had 1,063 yards receiving. He's only his second season. I think Golladay is a really good all-around player, and I bet they do more Patriot-style stuff in Detroit, which doesn't quite fit him perfectly, mm-hmm. but I bet it fits his game better than we would imagine.
No, I was going to say, in your defense, Andy, this is only his third season coming up, but we have talked about him a lot, and I think you did peg him in this lightning round 1 year ago. I do love Chris Godwin as the big slot in Bruce Arians' offense in Tampa Bay, but
okay.
And I like Robbie Anderson as a guy who might be knocking on the door of this top 10 list next year. He had a monster finish last season. I just think he's on the verge of breaking out into a special player.
I can't wait to see him in Adam Gase's system because Robbie Anderson is a scarier version of Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills is not very fast. Anderson is fast. So Anderson's going to play the Kenny Stills route in that scheme, I would imagine. Kenny Stills' role, of course. But what we need to know is how sharp of a football IQ does Anderson have? Because Stills is like a quarterback out there, and he can run anything under the playbook, and they have a lot of option routes or either or type of routes that you read the defense in Miami or now it's New York. If Anderson can do that, he's going to have 1,200 yards under Gase. Oh, hey, by the way, Gary, one more thing. I'm looking for some new researchers to help out with things like what we've done here on the podcast or research projects. Paul Duncan's one of the guys. Ryan Taylor, people who hear this show, they know Ryan Taylor or Reed Foster. If anyone's interested in doing that, my email me at andybenoitnfl@gmail.com, and I'd love to hear from you.
All right, Andy. I think that's a wrap. I think that's it. It's it for wide receivers. If you missed it, we have already done running backs. We've done quarterbacks. We have done linebackers. You just got to go back in your feed a little bit to see what's up there. But that's going to do it for now. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster, Ryan Taylor, Paul Duncan, our number three voter this week. Thank you to him. And thank you, as always, to producer Brandon Mix. Best of the best. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. We'll be back with more position ranking shows coming up all summer long. Get the Bad Football Movies podcast every Friday. Get Jenny and Connor and Albert every Wednesday on news from around the league. You get it all if you subscribe to the MMQB podcast family, which you should wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.